Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show. We've got Wendell Seavey on. And before we get to Wendell, I just want to make a couple announcements. We are going to have our ninth court appearance here with the East Eddy Ranch, you know, trying to keep the doors open here with the powers that be, you know, and the Agenda 21 and all these other people seem like they're doing all they can to close the doors. But anyway, I don't think it's going to be a problem or it's going to ever happen. It's just basic minor code violations that they've tried to turn into a criminal offense, which is beyond ridiculous. But so goes it in the UFO field. It's what they do. But anyway, that's this Tuesday. If anybody wants to come down to the courthouse in the White Salmon area, the West District in White Salmon, Washington, you can come down and join us and, you know, keep an eye on these guys and see what they're up to. The other thing is we just got through watching Prometheus. Yeah, I am a little late in watching that, and I did watch it, and it was another futile attempt at turning in the ancient gods into, you know, returning to destroy the Earth and kill all of humanity and totally, you know, create the program that, you know, ETs, ultra-dimensionals are evil, the ancient astronauts are evil, and you know, they're getting ready for their programs. You know, they're trying to send out another threat. They're just running out of threats is where they're going with these movies. But anyway, many people ask me to talk about that, so that's my take on it. But, you know, again, it's the same old story, you know. Evil beings coming to take over the Earth. You know, I don't know when they're going to get a new story. But anyway, that said, I wanted to welcome Wendell to the show. He's the author of Working the Sea. He was born in a small fishing village in Maine. Son of parents born in the late 1890s, Wendell was exposed to many stories the old people told. As he grew up, his psychic abilities became more noticeable, and he dreamed of things that happened in the future. His life became filled with many people who opened his mind to many other ways of thinking, and he realized that there is more to be seen than what the five senses tell us. So without any further ado, I want to bring Wendell on the show. Wendell, are you with us?
I am with you, James.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. And one question could I ask you right at the start? Would you be able to tape this show so Annie and I could have a copy of it?
Oh, definitely. It'll be in the archives and we can send you a copy of that.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you very much.
You know, I hear kind of a little bit of an Irish brogue, is that correct?
Well, many people think it's Irish, James, but actually it's from Somerset County, England. I'm English.
Okay.
But you could confuse me with Irish very easily. Mm-hmm. But anywhere as I go throughout this world, anybody from England, once they hear me speak, say, "You're from Somerset." And they're absolutely right. And my ancestors have been here since the 1600s, and I'm the only one in my family to take on this accent. No one talks like me.
That's interesting. You can hear a little bit of the Maine accent in there, and the English as well. Yeah, you sound like you have a very interesting story. I know you've got a lot to talk about. You've spent a lot of time in the sea, and I guess what's the main catch that you work with in the ocean? Is it lobsters?
It was lobsters, and I also went hook line fishing for hake, haddock, cod, pollock, halibut, and have gone for shrimp and scallop. So, but my main was fishing for lobster and pollock, haddock, cod, and hake, which is all a cousin to each other.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to I know John told me we probably should get into this later in the show, but I'm just really curious. He said that, you know, while out in the open sea there and you know, going after your lobster and then the other assorted fish that you're going after, that you had some experiences out there. I guess you actually had an encounter or saw some pretty interesting things flying around in the ocean out there.
Yes, I will tell you about four main stories, and then we will take it from there.
Great.
And I have watched the DVD that John Savage made of you and have now got a better insight of the city. And the first sighting I ever saw was in November of 1965. And it was me and my fiance at the time, Susan Tibbetts, was going into Northeast Harbor. And this was about 7 o'clock at night. So it was very dark. And as we was driving down over this hill that leads into Northeast Harbor, it's actually the hill right where John Savage lives, was these lights that appeared in the southeastern sky. And these lights were about a dozen of lights, and they went horizontal and they went vertical. And they come on all at the same time, such as horizontally, boom, 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 right one, or vertically. And they could go off all at once, or they could come on one at a time and go out one at a time. It was almost like they were playing games with us. And so we was watching these lights in the sky, and I pulled over to the side of the road with the headlights on of the car, and we was watching them, and I said to Susan, I says, let's try something. So I shut the lights off immediately with all their lights on, and boom, they shut their lights off immediately too, and she got frightened. She said, Wendell, let's get out of here. We went and visited a friend in Northeast Harbor, and that was the first sighting of that type of light. Now, I have seen that type of light for a period of from the mid-1960s to the mid-1970s, and I'll give you a few stories of them, and then they vanished away. My second sighting was in either the month of July or August of 1966. And my brother Frank was with me, and he was 21 years older than I was. I was going on 28 years old at the time, and he was going on 49. And we was trawling for hake that summer, and we had to go out into the ocean, open ocean, about 20 miles to catch this type of fish. They're a deep water fish. We would leave the harbor at 1 a.m. in the morning. And this particular morning when we left, it was a crystal clear morning as far as visibility to see, but there was a high bank of overcast clouds overhead, so you couldn't see the stars. There was no moonlight, but it was just what you'd say a pitch black night. And it's about probably 20 minutes to go from Bass Harbor across Blue Hill Bay, and we was headed between two islands. I'll send you a chart so you can see it at some point. So you'll be familiar with what I'm telling you. And Black Island was on our port side, left side, and the island of Plaisance was on our starboard side. And my brother Frank was standing in the companionway of the door. So his visibility was not as good as mine. I was on the starboard side. It was a lobster-type boat, 35 feet long, 10 feet wide. And I had a better view than he did. And as we was going down the island of Plaisance by the Putt Beach, which is a long sandy beach on this island, because it's a pitch-black dark night, I looked up to the southwest of the Putt Beach, and I would say about 3/10 of a mile from my boat, and probably 0.2 mile inland on the shore, I looked up, and there silhouetted in the sky was what I can only explain to you was a spaceship. This spaceship looked like what the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind drafted up for that movie. Now, if you can visualize in your mind a spaceship as big as this one, about 1,200 to 1,500 feet above the land in solid blackness, dark, the hull was very dark color. It had to be black, or it had to be an OD, like a army paints their trucks or a battleship gray. It was dark, and there was no lights on her. And like the spaceship of the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you've got these windows around the outer perimeter. Mm-hmm. But on the spaceship, it was all dark. And I called my brother Frank over. I says, come over here and look up here, right over at the southwest on a 45-degree angle. Tell me what you see. And he said, my God, what is that? Now, this man had been in World War II. And he'd been in three of the major campaigns of Europe, in battles in Germany. So he'd seen a lot. And he says, I've never seen nothing like that. Mm-hmm. Then, right out of the base of her came a spotlight. And I would say the spotlight was at least 15 to 20 feet in diameter, and it radiated a great shaft of light right down on the island of Plaisant. Mm-hmm. Now here's what I wished I had done. I wished that I had shut the engine off of the boat and see if we could have heard any sound from the engine of the spaceship, but I didn't. I also wished I had nudged my boat into the putt beach. It was a sandy beach. I could have done it safely. Got off the bow of the boat with a flashlight and gone up and into the woods and got right under that shaft of light and looked at it. Let my brother just back the boat off into safe waters. Mm-hmm. And it would have been a smart idea or not, I don't know.
Most people would run the other way as soon as they see something like that. They'd like gun the engine and turn the boat around and go back to shore and even forget they might have had a camera on board.
Maybe that is so, but I think, James, if I had done it and they had taken me on board and maybe I could have wrote a different book, Life on a Spaceship, instead of work. But if I had, how would my brother ever explain how I disappeared? Would anyone have believed him? So that's one. Now I'll tell you what I actually done, which I have kicked myself for doing. I said, do you want to see your little brother make him shut that light off? And he says, I'd like to know what in the heck you're going to do about it. I said, you watch me. And I turned the boat facing the spaceship with her spotlight on, and I flicked my three running lights off and on, two or three times, and boom, they shut that lights off like that, and that whole thing disappeared. And he looked at me with his mouth wide open and said, how'd you know they'd do that? Well, the only reason I had to think they might was that time I shut my headlights off when I see the horizontal and vertical light. And they did. And we kept going. And we went out toward Green Island Channel for about 2 miles. And when I turned around, looked back, they was right back over the island of Pezent with that spotlight on.
I wonder what they're doing. You didn't see anything go up that light, or like see any objects being picked up or anything of that nature?
No, we didn't. And like I say, it was a dark night. We had a green stack light, a red port light, and a white light. And we came from Bass Harbor, and they could definitely see us long before we could see them. And they hovered right over that island. But what it was, the darkness of the night, looking up in the sky, she silhouetted herself with the sky so I could see her. And then we slowed down to look at her. And she was as, now I know Hollywood has tricked photography, and what the actual size of that spaceship was, I don't know. But what tried to make us as viewers of the movie think it was, that one was in real life, James. I not see the light, see the ship.
What would you guess, like just a guesstimate on how, let's say, wide do you think that ship was?
How wide?
Yeah.
Okay, we gotta take two dinner plates, and we gotta place them right together. That's mm-hmm. the shape of her. So we're doing a circle. Oh, my God, James, I don't know, but I am going to say, I'm going to say 300 to 400 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was huge. It was huge, but
yeah.
It was a circular thing. Mm-hmm. I'm in a ship, but it's not like a ship on the sea. You got a picture on one of your things about a city, and it shows a sea captain looking at a disc-like object in the sky, and it was like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever seen, I know I've had some people that actually worked on submarines, and they had the watch, and they had all kinds of objects they were actually monitoring under the water, you know, flying at incredible speeds. But they saw a lot of strange lights, you know, under the water moving very quickly. And they went back and they recorded what they saw, and then they went back to the log to find out if it was there, and it mysteriously disappeared. But a lot of people have seen these underwater, they call them, I guess, USOs, underwater submersible objects or whatever, that they can't identify. And I'm curious if you've ever seen that, like just strange lights moving around or lighting up the water underneath you or in the somewhere in the ocean.
No, but I'm going to give you another story now that
okay.
What you're trying for. And this story happened sometime between 1969 and 1971. I can't tell you exactly which year, but it happened in the month of December. And so I'm ready to go offshore lobstering. And that's about 12 to 20 miles out in the ocean in deep water to catch lobsters. Mm-hmm. And I was placing my traps out in that depth, and I was also taking the traps inside up and storing them on the wall. And I came in sometime in the middle of December of that time.
Mm-hmm.
I came in the afternoon with the load traps on and going to store them on the dock. And it was, the tide was down, and the tide wouldn't be up till about 6 o'clock that night till I could get the traps off. So I came from the town of Southwest Harbor, which is about 4 miles from Tremont, where I was fishing from, and I noticed these horizontal and vertical lights out over Bar Harbor Head, way out in the harbor. I would say, 1 to 2 miles away from me, at least 1.5 to 2 miles and a half away from me. And they was doing that little vertical, vroom, 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 and horizontal, vroom, 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 vroom. And I watched them as I was driving over. It's pitch black, but dark. It's December in Maine. Days are short. And as I was going out to my boat, there was this man. His name was George Sawyer. Now, George Sawyer, in my estimation, was a very macho man. And I can only describe him to you as take the movie actor John Wayne. Well, mm-hmm. Sawyer was the John Wayne East. He was that type of man. Mm-hmm. He asked me, says, are you going lobstering this winter, Wendell? And I said, yes, I am. Well, he says, I'm not. I'm going scallop fishing. So he says, when you unload your trap, clean your boat up, he says, come alongside and I'll give you my bait. I'll give you what I have left over and you can have it free. And I says, good enough. I'll be about 45 minutes, Joe. So I turned off, I unload my traps, and while I'm doing it, I notice he starts up his engine and he starts out of the harbor on this pitch black dark night and he goes down the west side of Bass Harbor. Lights on the east side went riding over towards Bass Harbor Head. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what in blazes is he going out the harbor this time? But anyway, he did. So I'm there unloading my trap, washing my boat up. In the meantime, he comes in and he puts his boat on the mooring, and I go out and I go up alongside of him. And a great big man, he's just the size of John Wayne, and he's just glaring. I said, George, you look like you've seen a ghost. And he just stared at me and he says, Wendell, if I told you what I just saw, you wouldn't believe me. And I says, oh, don't count on it, George. I said, didn't have something to do with light, did it? And then he loosened right up. He says, you know about him? And I says, oh, yeah, I'm familiar with him. So I said, tell me what happened. Well, he says, from my point of view out on the harbor, he says, I see this boat. What I did was probably a mile outside of Lopez Point, and Lopez Point, about a mile of land outside of where we were up near the harbor. And he said, I think this boat was about a mile outside of Lopez Point, Blue Hill Bay. And he says, I went out to give them a tow in because they were blinking their lights. And it was almost like an international distress signal. If you couldn't communicate with radio, you was having troubles. And so he says, I went out to offer to tow them in the harbor if they needed it. And he says, I got almost up to them. And he says, the boat started to head towards Swan's Island in a southwest direction. He says, I was so mad to think that they led me clean out there for a wild goose chase that he says, I opened the engine, hold up wide open, and tried to catch him. But he says, I wanted to give him a piece of my mind. And he says, as I was pursuing this, he thinks he's pursuing a boat. He says, these lights went right up from the surface of the ocean right up into the sky, out of sight.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. We have a lot of stories here by the Yakima Nation here, where they thought people were out, you know, on the reservation there in places where they shouldn't be, and so they went out in their vehicles to find out who these people were and what they're doing on the reservation in this certain area. And the same thing happened that they saw some taillights and they went after these taillights, you know, trying to catch these guys, and all of a sudden they just took off and went flying over three hills. You know, it didn't go down in the gullies or anything. It just went straight across three hills and finally they said, "Whoa, did you see that?" And he goes, "That guy just traveled about 25 miles in about 2 seconds, you know, and was gone." You know, so, you know, that happens here quite a bit.
But rather they can go underwater, I haven't heard that. I've heard of it, like, I listen coast to coast a lot. You have many different speakers on it. And they'll talk of these things one time or another, some speaker will. But anyway, this is the closest one that I know of a fisherman that saw one down on the surface. He didn't say it come up out of the ocean, but right on. You would assume it was a boat.
Yeah. And
anyway, I asked him if he see it like in the sky, silhouetted, but the light that was so bright, they blinded him, and he was unable to see what the ship itself looked like.
Mm-hmm. Have you... I guess you have. Did you have one more story? I guess you have another, one other sighting.
Yes. I was coming up. I was out Winter Lobster fishing. I don't know what year it was, but it was back in the 70s. And I was coming in, and it was about 6 o'clock at night, pitch black, dark. There was a heavy overcast again in the sky, so there was no stars showing, and there was no moonlight. It was just a pitch black night. And I, probably about a half a mile in out of the, coming in from the ocean towards Bass Harbor Head Light. Mm-hmm. And I looked west of Bass Harbor outside of it. And there was this disc that lit up in the sky, and it looked like a full moon, what it looked like. But it wasn't the moon. It came right on, right out of the blackness of the night, and I could see dark water in Blue Hill Bay beyond where this object was. And I could see dark water in the ocean behind me. But from where that object was to where I was, it was making the water light up like moonlight will. And so I knew, you know, this was not something like a moon or something like that, because the moon would have lit up the whole ocean. And as I watched this thing, it disintegrated from east to west, from right to left. The whole thing disintegrated. The light went out in the sky. And when it did, it left a black disc. Looked something like a dinner plate right in the sky. And then disappeared. Hmm. I saw that that night, and it was 2 or 3 years later, me and a bunch of fishermen was in at the wharf talking that day, and we were talking about unidentified lights. And so each one of us was voicing what we had seen and heard. I was probably in my early to mid-30s at the time. And we had every age group right up to in the 70s there. And we had this man named Everett Butler was there. And he was probably in his 50s at the time. And he was the spot. He just laughed at it. He just laughed ridiculously everything we said. And he says, "You fools, just let your imagination run wild. When you see it, you're nothing but a bunch of fools, what you are." And so it is say, and everybody else. And then I told them the story I saw, the last one I just told you about this disc outside of Bass Harbor. And another man named Rod Stanley, he was in his 50s too at the time, early 50s, and he spoke up. And he says, "I am some glad to hear there was somebody else see that besides me, because he says I was on Lopus Point that night and I saw the same thing. And he says I've never dared to tell anyone because I thought they'd feel I was crazy. Mm-hmm. And I said, you was west of it, I east of it, and we see the same sight, didn't we? And he says, we did, Wendell. And then this man in his 70s, Ralph Benson, spoke up. Now, Ralph Benson was like a Native American. You spoke to him with respect. You did not belittle him, allow him, or it would be about three generations before he'd forgive you for it. So I think and did great respect. And he spoke up, and he says, well, I was born in 1893. And because some people said, oh, the airplanes, that's something like that, you know, the light. And he said, well, I was born 1893. And he says, my mother and father has told me when I was young about those lights, seeing them off Lopus Point, before I was ever born. And I says, well, that couldn't have been an airplane, man, could it? He said, I don't think so, Wendell. And no one, and no one ridiculed him either.
Yeah. You know, we have a lot of that happening here. People keep saying that what we're seeing here in our area is just back engineered, you know, military and things like that. And I go, well, you know, some of these stories go back to the 1800s. And, and we weren't even flying planes then. So basically, the stories they come up with, I go, if you listen to the Native American lore about the area here, they talk about the ships. There's a long history, you know, going back to Kenneth Arnold, actually, in 1947, who coined the word flying saucers, saw the ships land on the western slopes of the mountain. And we have video of this door opening on the mountain and things flying in and out of it, which would validate the Native American stories about a crystal city or some kind of an opening there. And this there's just hundreds of years of history of UFO activity in the area, you know, with even Dr. Jalen Hynek. But these people keep saying, even the head of the UFO reporting centers are saying there's no activity here whatsoever, or you know, there's, and you know, it just blows me away how when we do have people like that, these staunch skeptics, when they never do the research or really look into the facts or ask people, you know, about what they've seen or if there has been other activity in the area.
Yes, I understand, James, what you're saying and your frustration and. And, you know, Air Force will belittle it. I told my brother that night, I said, if you asked the Air Force what you saw up there, they would probably tell you that was a figment of your imagination, or that light has been there all the time and you just haven't seen it. And I will tell you one thing, James. If I was a fighter pilot in the Air Force, and that object was up there that night, and I was given the order to fire at it, I will have to tell you, if I'd been a fighter pilot, I would have said an act of contrition for I put those rockets, because I know I could have kissed my body goodbye.
Yeah.
And what I think is that technology is so far superior to ours that don't want us to believe they couldn't defend us against it. And they're not hostile, James, because if they wanted to take us over, they could do it in a heartbeat. They are superior to us.
Oh, yeah. You know, you look in the ancient biblical frescoes, you know, all the frescoes all around Europe, they're full of UFOs in them. You go to any ancient culture, even the Chinese, you know, their culture, any of the India and India, their sacred books, the Vedas, talk about the ships, the different kinds of ships, even talk about how they propelled themselves, you know, what, you know, there's even directions on how to build one in there. It's kind of crazy. But, you know, even in the pyramids, they have rockets and people standing next to rockets and cave paintings with ships in them. But, you know, yeah, obviously they've been around for a long, long time. And if they were here to take us over, it does make sense. They would have done it a long time ago.
Well, with the technology we have today, James, I mean, we'd be dinosaurs compared to them. And how can the government say, holy God, if they wanted to attack, we couldn't do an earthly thing about it. They can't do it. So they got to make it look like we're the fools.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Something like that anyway.
Well, but it's definitely true. They can't control this situation. I mean, just two nights ago, we had a massive ship come in. I mean, it was big, and it was just lit up like crazy. And it came flying right over the ranch, and we watched two jets vector in on this ship. And as soon as they got close to it, it just vanished. The whole ship just disappeared. I mean, it was huge. It was bright. We had probably like 8 or 9 witnesses standing out there observing this ship going over. And, you know, it was undeniable. It was not the space station. It wasn't, you know, any of the known objects up there, because we looked it up to make sure, you know, it wasn't the ISS or the shuttle or anything else. So all of the shuttles are grounded now. But, you know, I watched these things just vanish whenever we try to take an aggressive, you know, move to them. And I actually watched one jump behind a helicopter that was chasing one, and it just kept jumping behind it. And the helicopter make a long pass to turn around, and it just jumped behind it again. And it was just playing tag with this helicopter for quite a while. And I had a friend of mine that filmed the whole episode, and then when he got home, they busted him for having a small amount of pot in his house or something like that. I don't know what they busted him on, and then stole his camera.
I know. Now, like, that goes right back to that spaceship that Frank Nicey, that night in the summer of 66, is that big ship, once it shut its lights, how that ship vanished so quick. But it did. It shut its lights off, and it was silhouetted in the night sky. We could view it before it turned its lights on. We could view it when it turned its lights on, and when it shut its lights off, it vanished in an instant. How that happened, I don't know. I'm talking.
Yeah, they don't seem to fly like they can actually fly like a regular plane or whatever if they want to. But these things, I see them just vanish, and a lot of times they just jump. They jump to wherever they want to be. They just pop out of existence and pop back in wherever they want to be. And it's just amazing technology. And we actually watched one more from 1 to 3, and then back to 1 again, and then go back to 3 again. You know, that was a mind blower, and we actually have it on film. We actually filmed this ship doing that, and you know, I would love to see the Air Force explain that one. I don't think we have any kind of an airplane that can turn into 3 and back to 1 again.
No, we can't. And of course, obviously, out where you are, you see a lot more. Quite a bit in the mid-60s and 70s. I haven't seen anything late years here. But obviously, you people out there have seen a lot more than I've seen. But and that is wonderful. But anyway, I did not know of you till of John Savage, but I have heard of a SETI, because I listen to Coast quite frequently. Mm-hmm. And had a number of speakers that have been on and talked about being at your ranch and the magnificent unexplained sights they've seen there. So, you know, I was aware of you out there, you know, by listening to Coast that way and some of the guests they've had on.
Yeah, I find it kind of interesting that we've had so many people call in and others lecturers and teachers and healers, people from all, you know, have come here and to conferences and have seen the ships, and then they go on coast to coast and talk about it, their experiences here, but they won't have me on the show. You know, they won't have me on coast to coast, which I think is pretty interesting.
What Savage told me, and I told John, I said, you speak to John B. Wells. He's on Saturday night.
Yeah, yeah. I like John. I think he does a great job, and he covers a lot of things that it seems like the other hosts won't touch. You know, he really brings out the cutting-edge information.
I don't know what the politics of that show is, and I know George Norrie is the head, but I don't know whether John B. Wells can have whoever he wants on his show. But he comes on Saturday night, and he broadcasts from, that gambling city, Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He comes out there, and I'll bet he would have you on a minute if he could. And there's a new boy on the block now that's going right like wildfire, and his name is Clyde Lewis,
Grass
Zero. And he's coming out of Portland, Oregon, and he's coming across the country as far as Maine, and he is the new one up and coming right now, James, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I just – actually, his when he just came on and got all of his affiliates, and it seems like he is part of that same network, and he's just coast to coast now. He's all over the place, and I helped launch his first show. Actually, I was the guest on his first show where he went national.
Wonderful. Well, I've just become aware of him in the past month, so you know he's new to this area, and I to 103.9 FM out of Bangor, Maine. And they got 103 that covers the southern part of Maine. So
great.
FM stations cover that like coast to coast. And what they've been doing is from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock on nights, they've been, except weekends, on Monday through Friday, they've been playing like or past shows on it, you know, not one on that night from 10 to 1, and then 5, the new show comes out. Of course, George Norrie is off out of Los Angeles. And, of course, he's on usually 5 nights a week, but he does have other speakers on throughout the weekend, so he takes a break. And the live show is 1 to 5. But what they've done is they've replaced playing those review shows of Coast to Coast with this Clyde Lewis. So he is now on Maine from Monday through Friday from 10 to 1 o'clock live. Mm-hmm.
That's great. I'm glad he's getting that coverage out there. And Clyde's a good friend of mine. He actually was just up here about 3 weeks ago. And they did a lot of footage, you know, for his TV side of things and shot a lot of – I guess they're working with the survival store there in Portland with the co-producer, you know, of the show, of I've got a brain fart here. I'm trying to think of his name.
I get him.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know why I'm blanking out. It's, Michael Knight, yeah, Michael Knight. I just had a blank out there, but yeah, Michael Knight has the survival store in Portland, and they're working together to, you know, in a business adventure and getting his show out. And he does a great show. I always love being interviewed by Clyde, and you can just go to Ground Zero on the internet and find out, you know, where I guess where he's broadcasting in your area, or actually listen to the show on the internet.
Well, if you get on his show, I mean, you're coming coast to coast, so I think you're getting good cover. You're getting as good coverage. You have.
Yeah, I need to get back on. I'll probably give him a ring again and get back on again. But I was just on his show maybe 3 weeks ago. But I could definitely give him an update on what's been happening here. Now, over in your area, have you? It seems to be that there must be something going on with that island. There must be is there any kind of like stories or things like that about paranormal things happening around that area?
It's a power center. It's there's places like in New Mexico that are Earth power centers.
Yeah.
This island is one of them, James.
Mm-hmm.
Lopez Point, especially, is a very special place, but this whole island is. And so like you talk about earth energy or things like that, I could take you to power centers around this island. So this is an island that you will either do good very well or you won't. It can work positive or negatively towards you, if you understand what I'm saying. But Lopez is powerful.
It sounds like Hawaii, and a lot of people go to some of the islands in Hawaii, and they try to stay, and they can't. They're just pushed right off the island.
Right.
And it's just too much energy.
And it worked that way here on Mount Hood Island, too. Annie and I have watched it time again. Yeah,
it happens here at the ranch too. It's amazing. People will come here and everything just comes up just because this is a vortex or a power center here. And boy, people come and we always say they come and they go, I love this place. I just feel such love and joy and bliss here. And I said, well, give it 3 days, you know. And they go, what do you mean? And I said, well, you know, that energy you're feeling is going to bring up everything that doesn't align with it. So. In about 3 or 4 days, you might be having a different story, and in process or processing, you know, your old wounds and traumas and whatever else is going on.
Yeah, and it's same right here, James. Same on this island. So if you ever get the urge to come this way, then you will see John Sack and our territory and. Annie and I'll always take you right in. It's not like your ranch out there, but anyway, you can get a chance to view the island for yourself, and I can show you the spots of where I've told you these stories of sightings I've seen.
I'd love to get out there. I haven't been over to the East Coast at all. I don't know much about it. I went to New York once when I was a kid, and that's about it. I was at Larchmont Shores or something.
Uh-huh.
And that's about all I know about the East Coast. You know?
Well, Maine is a rural state. It's quaint and it's tucked right up in the northeast part of a country. You can't go no farther unless you go to Canada. So, you know, you come to Maine for a reason. If you want to, you don't just drive through it. So, you know, if you ever want to do come this way, I mean, you have a way to contact us, and we'll make sure you have room. And
bring your UFOs.
Yeah, they do seem to follow me, you know, it's on a regular basis. You know, I always thought about that. Maybe... you know, that might be something to get into. I don't know if you're involved in that anymore, if you still have your boat, but take people on sacred tours to these power spots and tell them there's a lot of UFO activity around the area. You know, it might be a fun project to get involved in.
You know, I'm a Walmart greeter now. I've been there for the last 5.5 years. Mm-hmm. So go fishing no more, but my son has a boat. So I have ways of getting out there and showing you things that has happened and what we're talking about, you know.
Yeah, that would be almost a movie in itself, you know, to do a little – take a camera and do a little movie and shoot the scenery there and where people have seen these ships and what's going on and check out the island.
Well, there we have John Savage.
Yeah. Tom, get his camera rolling and we're going to get in time for part two. But anyway, yeah. So, you know, we're coming up to the end of the hour here pretty quick. And I know I've got another guest coming on the second hour. But how do people get a hold of you or to get your book, the Working the Sea?
Okay. You can go on Amazon and get it. And my wife, Annie, is right here. So why don't I let her talk to you a minute? Go ahead, Annie.
Okay, great.
Hey, Jim. They could, anybody who would like to get a hold of Wendell can, since he does not do any kind of emailing of anything, but they can get a hold of me. And it's Annie, Anny, at roadrunner.com.
Okay. Could you repeat that again? Because it broke up a little bit.
Really? Anny. Roadrunner.com, Annie.
Oh, great. And that's how they can get a copy of the book or
give the book through Amazon.
Amazon.
And it's called Working the Sea.
Great. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read that yet, but I'm sure it sounds very interesting. And I know if Wendell can write as well as he tells his stories here on the air, it's definitely going to be a bestseller.
Thank you, James. That was a great compliment. Thank you.
Hey, well, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we're coming up to the end of the hour here, so I'll have to be signing off. But again, keep up the great work and keep your eye on the skies because I think they're going to have a lot more activity here real soon.
Okay, James. Thank you for having me. It was an honor to be on your show. And best wishes.
Keep up your good work, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, best wishes to you and Annie, and keep up the good work.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Yes. Bye-bye. Night.
All right, we're coming up to the end of the hour, folks. This is the end of the first hour. The next hour, we're going to have Michal Ledwith, repeat performers from Michal. We've got a few calls into Michal. We're hoping to get him back on the air here real soon, but usually around Christmas, we bring him back on, and he can tell you some amazing stories. He has access to information nobody else does. He used to be an advisor to the Pope and left that vocation quite a while ago. But he knows more about the true life of Jesus and how Jesus became a Christ and the true stories about his family and go on and on and on. But it's a very empowering story. You know, it's not a story where we would want to be falling into worship and giving away personal responsibility to everybody else. It's more a story about how a master really did walk the earth and how he empowered people to make their own personal God connection and to be kind to each other and the planet. You know, he was a universal teacher and he taught about love and peace and forgiveness and all the things we ought to be practicing, you know, especially in the days to come with the new energies coming in. So anyway, we're going to open up the second hour here. Hopefully we can get this thing up and running on the second hour. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening and enjoy the second hour.